At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
ugh, I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew. Or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com today for limited time offers.
This is the Skate Podcast, talking Bruins hockey with WEEI Bruins writers Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and Brian DeFelice. Lace them up for some Bees talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI. Woo!
Welcome into episode 457 of The Skate Podcast. I'm Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. Bridget and Scott, much to discuss tonight, which is Monday night. We're recording a little bit later because we had to do this after day one of development camp for some other reasons. So we're going to talk about just that, which is day one of development camp. We're going to touch on the draft over the weekend in totality. And of course, we have free agency starting Tuesday at noon on July 1. And so we're going to touch on what that may look like for Boston. And we're going to go over some of the signings that they've done internally as well, leading up to free agency. So much to discuss today.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. There are a whole three players going to free agency, I believe, across the whole league.
Yeah, everything's just getting done today.
I think everyone else is re-signing. So.
Pretty much. Yep, pretty much. But nonetheless, we'll break it all down and see what we'll talk about what it looks like.
And I do feel like people have probably had a hard time following it over the past, I will say, 48 hours. Because if you were worrying about the draft, you know, you're thinking, who's the Bruins going to pick at number 7, and then you're trying to follow all the draft picks, and then next thing you know, they're making all their signings, and then they're not offering certain guys contracts. And there has been probably, I don't know, Scott, how many articles you had to write over the last 2 days?
I mean, not a ton, honestly. Like, we don't write up every single little move every more, but
yeah,
I mean, there's been a lot of stuff to update, and that's for sure.
Absolutely.
I mean, you said 48 hours. We're recording at 5:30 Monday. I'd say like the last 48 minutes have been insane. It's like everything got done right before 5 o'clock, right around 5 o'clock. So you guys can probably go first with your opening shift since yours are more Bruins specific, but yeah. part of mine will be about one big move in particular that just happened.
Okay. Yeah, no, there's a lot. So I'll start because chronologically, my topic is first. So the last time we talked was when right after the Bruins had drafted James Higgins with 7th overall, and it was very late. And then, you know, Scott was there again for the second round of the draft, and we just wanted to make sure we run through the guys that the Bruins got after Higgins in the first round. So on day two, they selected another kid set to go to BC, William Moore, second round pick, 51st overall. He'll be a freshman at BC this season. And then I'm just going to read off the names and we'll come back around to it later and discuss these guys a little bit more after the fact. But then they got a defenseman they had 2 second round picks. This one was, they chose defenseman Liam Pettersson with the 61st overall pick, Cooper Simpson, another forward in the third round with 79. And then this is somebody we were talking about right before we started broadcasting, was Vasek Blenar, defenseman, who they got in the 4th round with the 100th
mystery man,
the 100th overall pick, which apparently people have had a hell of a time trying to find his name and him, his stats and everything on Elite Prospect. But he was impressive already in day one, and people were saying he might be actually the best defenseman that was at development camp so far.
Yeah, but we can get more into it. I mean, it's a lot of skill work. I think making declarative statements like best defenseman on the ice is a is a bit of a stretch. He looked good. He looked good. Like, let's maybe slow down a little bit.
All right, so they got him out of the Swedish J18. So anyway, we'll get more into him later, but moving, he's from the Czech Republic, right? So mm-hmm. He's another Czech guy that they have. Then in the fifth round, they got Cole Chandler, another forward with the 133rd overall pick. And the last pick of the draft that they made was in the seventh round, 165, Kirill Yemelyanov.
Yeah, Yemelyanov. Yeah, I think is how you say
that. We'll learn that one as we go. So yeah, they ended up with two defensemen draft picks. They took some shots at a few different centers. Forward heavy, obviously, in this draft, and so we can get more into those guys later. And obviously, as development camp goes on too, a lot of those guys are there, so we'll get actual eyes on.
They're all there. All seven picks are there.
So we'll get eyes on them. See, you know, if we notice anything of any of those guys. Even though I know Hagans, and I'm pretty sure a few of the other guys got in real late, but still decided to practice or participate in the first day of development camp. Despite, I'm not even sure, did he sleep?
James Hagans and Will Moore they had two flights from LA to Boston canceled. Obviously, they were in LA for the draft. They didn't get into Boston. They didn't get to the hotel until 4 a.m. Monday morning. They reported to Warrior for 7 a.m. physical testing. And then we're given an excused absence. They were told, you don't have to go on the ice. Bruins put out a statement saying they weren't going to skate Monday. And they just said, well, we want to skate. And they went on the ice anyways. James Hagans had probably the quote of the day after, where he said, you would have to cut off my leg to tell me I'm not going on that ice. So, certainly a good first impression for both of them, but for Hagans especially.
So if they got sleep, it was like an hour. So they were running on fumes. They were just running off of like pure.
Unless they can sleep on a plane, which I can.
I can.
I envy anyone who can.
Yeah, I can't sleep on a plane. And if you do, it's not real sleep, you know.
Okay, so I want to do some recapping of just the Bruins signings over the last couple of days as it pertains to some of their RFAs, a couple of UFAs. But I just want to go back to just clean cut all of their transactions from the start of this summer to this point. It's just worth doing it out loud just once. And so it started back with re-signing Patrick Brown, who I believe was a UFA, 775 cap hit for a year. Then they signed
honestly, Brian, not to cut you off, they could have ended the offseason there and it would have been a success.
Well, I wasn't going to say it, but since you did, yeah, I agree with you on that one, Scott. Now, since there was only one way to go from there, which was down, they ended up going with a depth goaltending signing. What's his last name, Scott? Simon Zahajcek? Is that how you say it?
Oh, boy. Putting me on the spot.
Sorry about that.
Zajicek, I think. Yeah.
Okay. So, and he was Czech as well. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, they signed him, back in mid late May, cap hit of 872. Then they traded for Victor Soderstrom, right-handed defenseman, former first round pick. So we'll see what he can do. Then we got to Mason Lauri. He signed a, $3.2 million cap hit at 2 years, the bridge deal we've discussed. Morgan Geeky finally signed 6 years, $5.5 million. Okay, so Lauri and Geeky are both locked up. Michael Callahan, depth defensive signing, $775 cap hit for a year. Murat Husnadinov signed for 2 years, $925. We're all celebrating for that one. And then Michael DiPietro, a lot was talked about him potentially being attractive to other teams around the league. With his UFA's Group 6 status, and he signed at a cap hit of 812 and a two-year deal. So what does that mean for Jonas Korpisalo? We'll discuss that. And Johnny Beecher signed at 1 year, $900,000. And then Henry Yokiharju, who was a UFA, signed a three-year deal at $3 million. And more recently was Georgi Mrkulov. Bit surprising there as well, but he signs a one-year two-way deal for $775,000. And so that covers the signings to this point. And the Bruins have, I want to say, a cap remaining of around $12 million, maybe $12.7 million. And then They also just updated that they are not issuing qualifying offers to notably Trevor Kuntar, if you liked him down in Providence, Jacob Lauko, Ian Mitchell, Jackson Nelson, Oliver Wahlstrom, and a few others. But so all this has come down in the last, you know, day and a half. It's a lot of, you know, laundry work going on here as we head into UFA on July 1.
Yeah, and obviously Geeky is the big one there. That's one that I'd say based on Sweeney's comments last week, we weren't anticipating getting done before July 1st because Sweeney had said that they were in constant communication, but he did not believe they were, quote, on the doorstep of a deal. And that was only like 3 days before it ended up getting done. So, you know, he had also noted like it only takes one phone call to change things, and it in one direction or the other, it seems like that phone call happened and they were able to hammer it out Sunday night, you know, more than 20, you know, 36 hours basically in advance of free agency. Geeky would have been restricted, so it's not like he, you know, could have just gone to another team, but he would have been open to offer sheets. It would have opened up the possibility of, you know, of the two sides filing for arbitration if it drags on even longer. But instead it gets done. And I got to talk to Geeky on Zoom Monday afternoon, so we can touch on that. But it was pretty clear from talking to him that he really didn't have any interest in going anywhere else. I will get to my opening shift now, which is about another big contract and someone who maybe could have been a Bruins target. And that's Brad Marchand, who is not getting to the open market. Right before we started recording, news broke from Elliot Friedman that Marchand is closing in on a 6-year extension with the Florida Panthers worth $5.33 million per year. Aaron Ekblad also extending in Florida, 8 years, $6.1 million a year. Sam Bennett already had 8 years, $8 million a year. So the Panthers have done what seemed impossible, which is find a way to keep all three of them. They do it by going long-term with all of them, keep the AAVs down. Ekblad and Martian in particular certainly took discounts, but those are long contracts. In Ekblad's case, locks him up through age 37, I believe. And Marchand is already 37 and is now signed until he's 43. So it's clear that, you know, the Panthers are in full-blown win now, do whatever it takes to keep this group together. They will be paying for it on the backside of these contracts, but right now they probably don't care about that. They are trying to win a third Stanley Cup and the fourth after that, and they will deal with the consequences of, you know, 4, 5, 6 years from now. They'll cross that bridge when they get there.
Yeah, they're willing to bottom out at the end of those, maybe. But that's crazy. I don't think anyone would have thought 6 years for Brad Marchand, just given his age, and you know the Bruins weren't going to give him 6 years. It was the AAV is less than what we all expected, but the term is much longer. I think most people thought he's probably going to get anywhere between, you know, 2 and 4 years for an extension. So crazy.
He would have gotten 4 on the open market, and it would have been like maybe $8 million a year, possibly even more. So like the total money ends up pretty similar. But this one's just structured in a way that it's 6 years. And I saw people, just to add something, because I saw people speculating like, oh, well, if he just retires in 3 years, then they're out of the contract. No, not how it works. That cap, because he's over 35, that cap hit is on the book for the entirety of the contract, whether Marchand retires during it or not.
So unfortunate for people who thought that they saw, because there was yesterday, there was the reporting that was swirling like, oh, the Bruins are trying to talk to Marchand again before he hits the open, like, but I shouldn't say before he hits the open market, but as soon as he hits the open market, like Bruins and XYZ team are interested in talking to him, and people talking about, oh, I think maybe Marchand might come back. And that was only a rumor, or, you know, something people were talking about for a short amount of time, with Florida being able to get this done. So
I believe that was accurate, though. I've heard the same thing, that if he did get to the open market, the Bruins were definitely going to be one of the teams talking to him and making a serious offer. You saw Toronto and Utah mentioned as well. I've no reason to doubt that, but yeah, I think the Bruins absolutely would have circled back and tried to find something.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, Scott, you mentioned it, the Panthers, this is their window, and it's not necessarily a short one, but they're just going to try to optimize it while they're in it. I think they're willing to live with the risk of the backsides of these contracts. I mean, as you said, Brad Marchand's, I don't think he's playing until he's 43 years old. So something's going to have to give there. And to be honest with you guys, worst case scenario for the Panthers is that Ekblad's, you know, injury history continues. Marchand's, you know, age kind of comes to fruition. These two players are very good hockey players. They're champions, of course. And the upside of signing them, it makes all the sense in the world for the Panthers. But they are willing to take on some risk, because it's not just the backsides of these deals. These two players could run into problems on the front sides of these deals as well. But a risk they're willing to live with, and I can't blame them for that. As far as Marchand coming back to the Bruins potentially prior to signing in Florida, again, 37 years old, on the ice right now. When he's healthy, he's clearly a very effective player, certainly in the right role. But from a dynamic perspective, he's your captain. He gets traded away to your rival who ended your season in back-to-back years. He goes on to win a Stanley Cup with them and is a major part of it. And he's having the time of his life, as he should be, after winning the Stanley Cup, and he's partying with his teammates and the Florida fans, and tongue-in-cheek thanking Boston with chants in the crowd, and that's all fun and games. But to go right back to a Boston locker room after that, full of some of your former friends who are still starving for that success, when you just went and got it with their rival to play the Panthers going forward, it's just the dynamics there. Not to mention, it feels like it should be Pasternak and McAvoy's room now going forward. So I just think from a dynamic perspective, it would have been a mistake. Not saying that they couldn't use Marchand on the ice, but I just think going forward, it's like just the Band-Aid's been ripped off. He's now your ex. Don't be calling him drunk late night, baby, I miss you. Come back. No. You don't.
Which one of them?
You made your decision. You made your decision. It's time to move on. You know, no more booty calls late night. Move on.
You know what, Brian? I'll agree with you that in real life, no getting back together with your exes. But in this situation, I would have been fine. I would have liked them to at least have a conversation with Brad Marchand, because as we can get into now, look at what else is available. There is not a lot on the free agent market after what shook out today. And Brad Marchand was not only in price range, he was a good guy. Like, you knew what you were getting. You had that gap. Why? Because you traded him. You already knew where he was going to plug in, probably.
So how do you think that plays in the room? How do you think that would play in the room, though? Like, you think he would come back and they would just be like, hey, Marchie, welcome back. Congrats on the cup. Let's go back to board. Like, I'm sure they would have been happy for him, but I just think there's some things just can't be undone. I think you just have to move forward. It's best for everybody, I think.
But think about it, Brian. Look what there's left. Like, I'm trying to say is there's not a lot of moves out there. You have to at least consider it. I didn't think it would have been a bad thing.
Hockey-wise, it would have made all the sense in the world. Contract-wise, now, not 6 years, but 3 or 4 years, if that was what the deal looked like, I think that would make sense, because then you're not making a, you know, I would almost be like okay with a more short-term commitment to Marchand than, to be honest with you guys, like a long-term deal with Nick Ehlers or Brock Besser. They both kind of worry me. Like, I don't know if those two players are going to hold up great into their mid to late 30s. Marchand, I at least know he's like a workout psycho and keeps himself in shape. And so, like, yeah, it's a little scary when you're talking about your 37, 38, 39-year-old seasons. But I don't know. I know what his work ethic is. So, like, I kind of trust him to to stay pretty good for a few more years. But Brian's absolutely right. Like the locker room dynamic would have to be figured out. And I would hope if the Bruins were going to bring him back, that there would be conversations with Pastrnak and McAvoy in particular ahead of time and make sure they are okay with it and they are on board and they think everything can work. Because yeah, it would be a little awkward. Like those guys have been preparing to make this their team. It's a process that started after the trade deadline last year and now has continued into the off season. We talked to Hagans in the locker room today after practice. The first person to call him after he got drafted was David Pastrnak. Charlie McAvoy followed not too long after on a FaceTime. Like those guys are stepping into this kind of role now where they are the leaders of the team. They're the first point of contact for new guys. And now if Marchand were to come back, it would be like, okay, well, does all that go back to Marchand's job? And now it's his team again. Or does Marchand like somehow come back without a letter, or are they like three A's, or there would be awkwardness to work through there for sure. That's not to say they couldn't work through it, but you would have to make sure everyone is on the same page.
And again, you have to remember from a competitive standpoint, and a lot of this stuff is it's between the boards, right? It doesn't leave the ice. You know what I mean? When I talk about animosity amongst players, rivals. But from a competitive standpoint, David Pastrnak and Charlie McAvoy, they still hate the Florida Panthers players between the whistles. Nikita Zadorov doesn't like Sam Bennett on the ice between the whistles. Off the ice, they go back to their Calgary days. I'm sure they're all friends. But you know, if you're Charlie McAvoy and David Pastrnak and other players in the Bruins locker room that have been battling with the Panthers for a while now, they've had their seasons end at their hands, and Brad has been sipping champagne out of the Stanley Cup with them for the last couple of months, being best friends with them now.
But does he remember it?
Well, I'm just saying it's once that puck drops, it's like there are no friends. You're going to war with your buddies, and he just won a championship with those guys. And when you win a championship as a part of a team, you're bonded for life, whether you've been on a team for 10 years or you're a trade deadline acquisition.
He's going to go out there and be the biggest pain in the ass to whoever he plays against. It doesn't really matter.
I'm just saying, you know, it's whether it's hockey or you know, a real corporate setting, like there are interpersonal relationships that are at play here. It's not a game played by robots. They are humans.
Yeah. But also these are people who liked Brad Marchand before.
Nothing I'm saying is discrediting who he is as a player, what he would be on the ice next year, or if they like him or don't like him. I'm just saying you do need to have a level of unity as a team going through battles together, having won together, lost together. When somebody, you know, when somebody just, you know, goes to a different team 75% of the way through a season, not necessarily, I'm not blaming Marchand for doing it. He did what he had to do. He went and won a cup. Congratulations. I'm just saying to come back, it's just there's dynamics at play that I just think go beyond team need. And again, at the end of the day, he's with the Florida Panthers. So I'm sure there's going to be comments be like, you guys spent 15 minutes talking about something that didn't happen. But I just don't, you know, I guess what I'm saying is I know the Bruins have a need for a top six winger still. I understand he would fill that need, certainly in the short term. But from an intangibles perspective, I don't think it was the worst thing in the world for a clean slate going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it forces their hand to keep that Band-Aid ripped off. You had already ripped it off. Now you're not putting it back on. So I guess to push the conversation forward, because, you know, hopefully people do listen to this before unrestricted free agency starts at noon on Tuesday. What would you guys be trying to do? Because, by the way, we haven't even mentioned this yet, but Mitch Marner also off the market. Reported sign and trade with the Vegas Golden Knights. So he goes to Vegas on an 8-year, $12 million a year deal. Toronto, I think, is getting Nick Waugh back. I don't know if there are other assets included, but, you know, a little something for working with Vegas to make that happen. So, yeah, now that the top free agent forwards are Nick Ehlers and Brock Besser, who were probably that would have been the top end of what the Bruins were targeting anyways. I said before, I never got the indication they were going to go after Marner. Certainly not anytime in recent weeks. I do think Ehlers and Besser are players that they're at least looking at. I don't have a great sense for like how aggressive they're going to be, but it's pretty clear now that if you're not in it for real, if you're not going to be aggressive, you're not going to get those guys because they're now the two bells of the ball. Like everyone who needs a forward is going after them now because Marner's not there and Marchand's not there. We know Utah wants a forward. They're probably going after one, at least one of these guys. Toronto has a need for a forward. Other teams, Carolina wants someone. Like, there's going to be competition, and I don't have a good feel for whether the Bruins are going to be in that competition or whether they're going to settle for something even lower than that, which I got to be honest, I don't know if there's another true top six forward out there.
Yeah, think about it, like, do they then have to bring Hagans in early? Like, if they can't manage to get any...
No. So the two things are entirely separate. You cannot let free agency at all affect what you do with James Hagans. He is too important.
I mean, I personally want him to go back to school and think they will have him go back to school for another year. But what the heck does your roster look like if you don't find a way to sign a top six? They have the money too. Like they absolutely have the money to sign a top six forward, but now the options are so limited. So Marner off the table. And by the way, some of the defensemen we talked about also off the table. Dante Favreau signed an extension with the Blue Jackets. Bouchard just signed an extension with Edmonton, which that was obviously the big ticket defenseman, but anyway, he's also not available. So
Ekblad's gone.
What?
Ekblad is with Florida again.
Yeah. So like there's plenty of money left and there's only a few guys left. So maybe these guys just get an extreme payday, but yeah, there's not a whole lot left. And I think Scott, you were speculating this was before we knew any of this was going down. This was probably Wednesday last week when we're sitting around just kind of like joking and talking before the pre-draft press conference that you thought that Besser was who they're going to target. I think that they probably already knew Marner wasn't going to happen. So then you're setting your sights on some of the other guys that would be left like Ehlers and Besser. And who knows, there might be an overpay here in free agency now.
Which 100% is going to be an overpay. Whether it's by the Bruins or someone else, like those guys are getting paid.
So looking at the list, right? And now as far as the defense goes, signing Joakim Haru to a 3-year, $3 million deal, cap hit, that all but reassured me of what Scott said on the last episode, which is the right-handed defenseman market in free agency is thin. They're probably just gonna plug and play because even a trade now for a top four right shot defenseman, it's like, well, you got Peak and Joakim Haru, so that's an expensive seventh man if that's the case, right? So barring anything unforeseen, it's looking like their D might be what it is at this point going into next year. But as far as the forwards go, Mitch Marner gone, Sam Bennett gone. John Tavares, gone. Matt Duchene, gone. Brad Marchand, gone. Jonathan Taves, for what it's worth, gone. Andre Kuzmenko, gone. He re-signed in LA. He was going to be a low cost, high production acquisition. I kind of was looking at for Boston if they weren't in on some of the other guys. So, if we're talking, I mean, Patrick Kane is still out there, right? Michael Granlund's out or Mikael Granlund's out there. I know Scott mentioned Patrick Kane seems to have a deal in place, maybe in Detroit, but nothing's happened yet.
Yeah, I was going to say not anymore. Like to me, people were talking months ago, like right at the end of the season, that there was mutual interest and it seemed like they were going to get something done. I mean, we're on the eve of free agency now and it's not done. So like, I got to imagine he's going to go to market and I mean, we'll see. Everything is happening like so quickly. Like obviously he could sign right after we're done recording, but as of almost 6 o'clock Monday, It's not done yet.
Well, because you know the Bruins are going to do something. Like, they're going to address their top six, at least one of their opening, you know, their vacancies in their top six somewhere. So if it's not free agency, if they lose out on free agency, they're not entering the season next year without addressing at least one top six forward. So, you know, would you guys prefer that they sign, you know, a Brock Besser for, you know, six years, eight and a half, or a Nikolai Ehlers for 6 years, eight and a half for, you know, maybe 60 to 65 points, 70 points? Or would you rather just sign a Patrick Kane for a year or two at $3.5 million for his 60, 65 points? I mean, at this point, beggars can't be choosers, right? So, like I said, I think the Brewers are going to sign somebody, and not just anybody. They're going to have to sign somebody with like 60 point potential. In my mind, their roster is littered with guys that aren't that. So it doesn't make much sense to go out and try to sign, just picking up a name here, like a Jack Roslovic, if he's even still available. Like, I just don't see it. Like, so to me, in my mind right now, if we're talking UFAs, one of Brock Besser, one of Nikolai Ehlers or Patrick Kane, if one of those three guys, I have to imagine Boston's going to do what they can to get one of them. And I don't know if any one of them are have Boston high on their list.
Yeah, I mean, there's the trade market too, where, you know, depending on like how much stock you put into certain rumors or reports, Jordan Kyrou is a name that has surfaced recently out of St. Louis. Got to be honest, don't entirely understand why they would trade him. He's signed through 2031 with a cap hit of $8.1 million. Martin Natchez, we've mentioned him before, apparently not thrilled in Colorado because he's not thrilled anywhere. He has 1 year left at $6.5 million, so that would only make sense if there's an extension. Pittsburgh can trade Brian Rust. I think he's 33, but, you know, still productive. Like, he's a player I've always liked. I saw someone mention Jared McCann in Seattle could potentially shake loose. I like him. He has been right around a 60 point guy, like, but all of those, you're giving up future assets. Like, you, those, you know, first and second round picks you've started to pile up, you can kiss a couple of them goodbye. And if it's a Kyrou or Natchez, you can kiss a lot of premium assets goodbye, because those guys are in their prime and are very good.
Yeah. So that pretty much pushes your hand towards doing what you have to do in free agency, spending what you have to spend in free agency to fill. Cause like they have like over $12.5 million left in cap space. They have two holes in the middle six, unless you're plugging in, you know, maybe Lysell or some of the guys that are less proven. The way I see it, I think they have two holes in the middle six right now. Maybe you plug one in free agency and you plug one in with prospects, or, you know, you what do what you have to do. Like you mentioned off the top, they did re-sign Merkeloff. Maybe he gets a chance now, because there are holes here in the bottom of this roster, and then there's the second line hole as well. So they have almost $13 million to try to figure out what they can do with it tomorrow, you know, under 24 hours from now. And maybe they've had a guy in mind this whole time, and none of the stuff we've talked about affects their plans, maybe, besides they're going to have to throw him a little bit of extra money. But I don't know. What would you guys think if, say, both Ehlers and Besser get paid $1.5 million more than their projections, Bruins end up going cheap, get Patrick Kane or something like that, and what would you think? Like, would you be mad if you're putting on, like, just pretending you're a Bruins fan, or just putting on your GM cap, I guess, if they have a lot of money left over that they didn't use? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, again, you can't, I've been saying all summer, I need to see what this team looks like after, you know, the draft and free agency to really kind of get a gauge for them. If my gauge after that is that they re-sign Geeky and Lorai and Husnadinov and Yoki Haru, like and Johnny Beecher, if those are their signings of significance, then you know they don't make any sort of unforeseen trades for a top six guy and they enter the season with this current roster, they're going to be in some trouble. So, to answer your question, Bridget, I mean, it's got to be something. It's got to be one of Ehlers, Besser, or because listen, signing one of these guys to a contract, that's pro sports. Like it's every team has guys on their roster that are, around 50 to 65, 70 points. And you're probably paying a little bit more than you kind of want to. I mean, it is what it is. But if of those three players, Patrick Kane in particular, if you sign him to a 1 year deal, 2 year deal at $3.5-4 million, I mean, I'm pretty confident he's going to get you at least 50 points if he's healthy, probably upwards of 60, and you're not married to him on a long-term deal, and the cap hit's not bad. So if he's not re-signing in Detroit, but again, what are the Bruins value? Do they want somebody who's more part of their longer term plans? I mean, Besser is 28, Ehlers is 29. And, I think both of them are around 0.7. Besser is 0.78 points per game in his NHL career at 28 years old. And Ehlers is 0.77 points per game at 29. So you're getting productive players. I know people talk about Besser's inconsistencies, but when he's on, he's on. And he would help your top six for sure. If they come away with none of those guys, I'm feeling pretty uneasy. Do they try to trade for an Isaac Howard, somebody who's a great prospect, has a good NHL future on his way out in Tampa Bay, but he doesn't have the pedigree to his name yet, so I can't say that would help him big time next year if they even did him. And then Scott mentioned Natchez or something like that, or Kyrou. I got to see it to believe it. So I'm inclined to say, Bridget, that they got to sign at least one of them. I don't really care which one it is because I don't think Ehlers or Besser will be that bad of a contract. I think they'll be helpful players. They'll be signed through their mid-30s. It's not that big of a deal at those cap hits. The cap's rising. I know people say it all the time. I'm not afraid of signing Besser or Ehlers or Patrick Kane, really. It's got to be somebody, though. Somebody with 60-point potential. They have to do it because I love the James Hagans pick. That's not helping this team right now. Right now, the NHL roster is still lacking just as much as it kind of did at the end of April.
Yeah, we've used the phrase a couple times on this podcast and, going all the way back to the season. Like, it truly is a beggars can't be choosers scenario. Like, yeah, maybe there is some perfect player out there you wish they could get, but we're literally talking about, like, three names that are going to be on the unrestricted free agency market and the trade market. I mean, who knows who's actually available and who's not. Another name I don't think we've mentioned on this pod yet, Marco Rossi in Minnesota. We know they're open to trading him. That is someone who had 60 points at 23 years old. Like that catches your eye. That's pretty impressive. He's a 5'9" center. There are also legitimate questions about how he's going to hold up, whether he's ever going to be able to handle a true top six center type of workload, thinking like 19, 20 minutes a game. Like he might never be that player. He might be a talented point producing center that you kind of have to shelter. And I think that's sort of been part of the dilemma in Minnesota as to why they're open to trading him is I'm not sure they really have like a great feel for how to use him and exactly what he is going forward. But he is someone who helps your offense for sure. So you can add him to the list. But again, these are all, it's a lot of imperfect options and anything that even approaches a perfect option is probably going to cost you, first round picks, prospects, like it's going to cost you a lot in a trade. So I don't think Ehlers or Besser is particularly close to a perfect option. I have questions about both of them on a long-term contract, but push comes to shove, like if they're out there and you have the money and that's all it costs, then you know, it's something like it. Because, yeah, you can't go into next season with like, I mean, we'll try Matt Potter on the second line. Like, that's too much to throw on his plate in a season where he just spent a lot of time in the AHL. Like, I don't want to have to do that, you know? And like, there's literally no one else. There's no one else in this team right now. Fabian Lysell, like, we see how inconsistent he is. Georgi Mirkalov, I mean, maybe, but they gave him 6 games in the NHL last year. Like, I don't see how we could possibly talk about any of those guys being second liners or like sticking there and being effective.
I mean, I'm high on the prospect of Dan Schmelz. We talked about him earlier in the summer. I'm not high on him as a second line option next season. You know what I mean? Like, I got to see him a little bit more, see him in Providence do well, and maybe he comes up as a viable third line option. Maybe one day he works his way up. But I mean, offer sheets, I guess, could still be a thing, but I don't think that's easier said than done. I don't really see that happening. Scott, you mentioned you don't like the term that could come with an Ehlers or a Besser, and I understand it. I mean, but you know, you look at Ehlers' track record; he's been healthy for the most part in his career. So they say the best ability is availability, and he's had that. You know, again, Besser's 28, so if you lock him up for 6 years, he's 34, 35. We were just talking about Marchand signing for 6 years in Florida and Ekblad, and I know that those players are in a much different situation in Florida, and they're far more accomplished in their careers, and I get all that. But, you know, term is the nature of the beast, and I think a lot of teams making signings will have those same questions. That doesn't mean you can't do it. And I also think people are kind of a little bit scarred from or trepidatious based on last season with Elias Lindholm. And I do get that, but if you're going to rely on free agency for a top six forward, you have to live with the term. I'm not super worried about Besser and Ehlers as much as people say. I mean, Besser had a lot of personal stuff going on in his life in the last couple of years, losing his dad and just like, you know, life, kicks the shit out of you sometimes, and I think he took a while to bounce back from that. But I just think, you know, in a better situation in Boston, maybe that Vancouver locker room wasn't great. He's got a few friends in Boston as of right now, Mittelstadt. I don't know. I don't know if those would be terrible contracts, but especially with the cap rising, so I'm not too worried about it. But they got to do something. That's for damn sure.
I will say I would much rather have them overpay on either of those guys, Ehlers or Besser, and talk about a roster that looks different than last year than I would be if they, you know, had to get a little bit more creative. Like, I think plan A has to be spend, and plan B is, oh my God, those guys didn't want to come here. We need to make some sort of trade, and we have to be willing to give up the assets. But plan A has to be to use that, not hopefully the whole almost $13 million in cap space to get a deal done, but figure out a way to make sure your top six does not look like your top six at the end of the season last year, because otherwise this is not like we're going to be starting off having a different conversation than I thought we were going to be. We were talking about taking a step forward. We're talking about making their way towards being a playoff, you know, making the playoffs again. And if they can't get another top six guy, I just don't really see that be like that changes the whole conversation for the whole season.
Can I ask you guys a question real quick? I just want to try to look at this from all angles. If Jake DeBrusk was still on the Bruins, would you, let's just say DeBrusk was up this year and the Bruins were to sign him for a six-year deal, knowing the player, would you be fearful of a deal for 6 years for Jake DeBrusk? And I pose that because the DeBrusk in Boston, I had it up. So Jake DeBrusk, oh boy, I'm sorry guys. Where did it go? I just had it. Okay. He had 166 goals, 148 assists, 314 points in 547 games played. Brock Besser, 204 goals, 230 assists, 434 points in 545 games played. So in two less games played in his career to this point, both the same age, both taken in the same draft class, Besser has 434 points and DeBrusk has 314. I'm only saying that to illustrate, I think we would all be perfectly fine with Jake DeBrusk as a top six option on the Bruins for the next 6 years. Why would we be, you know, granted, Besser is going to be coming in at, you know, his higher production would come at a cost, right? He's projected to be making probably 8.5 on his next deal. DeBrusk is making 5.5. So that's a significant chunk of change. But from a hockey player perspective, is it the term that worries you, or is it the cap hit? Because as a player, if one wouldn't be worried about DeBrusk on a 6-year deal, I don't know why one would be worried about a Besser.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I probably wouldn't love DeBrusk for that long either. So they're kind of two different. So DeBrusk and Besser would be similar to me. Again, Besser's better, as you outlined, and is also going to cost more money as a result. But with those two, it's the inconsistency that worries me. Where not just from like game to game or shift to shift, but from season to season, like we've seen DeBrusk go from a really good year to a really down year. And Besser, again, it's at an elevated level, but the same kind of thing happens. Two seasons ago, he has 40 goals and 73 points. And this past season drops down to 25 goals, 50 points. And it's like, well, which one of those am I getting? And am I going to know in any given season? Like, if you sign him to a 6-year, 7-year deal, yeah, you may very well get another 40-goal season in there. But you're also probably going to get, like, a 23-goal season and a 26-goal season. And there's just going to be fluctuation that worries me. Ehlers, I'm less concerned about Ehlers. I like Ehlers. And I think I've said before, like, if I had to sign one, it would be Ehlers for me. I do think he's, at least in the regular season, more consistent. I think he plays a more complete game. He finally played well in the playoffs this year. I think he had 5 goals. He didn't play a ton because he missed the start of the playoffs, but I think he had like 5 goals in 7 or 8 games. Prior to that, his playoff production was terrible. I guess maybe I'm less concerned about that because you just got to get to the playoffs first. But that was a little bit of a knock on him for me. Again, I don't know if like 7 or 8 games this year completely changes that, but he did play pretty well for the Jets in the postseason this year. So he would still be my top guy. And I guess push comes to shove, yeah, I'd pay him. I'd give him the deal. I'd give him the term. It's going to be probably longer and more money than I'd like, but at least I like the player and feel pretty confident about what I'm going to get from him game to game and season to season.
Outside of scoring as well, because if you're talking about consistency, if you think Ehlers brings more consistency than Besser, it's because you think he does more when he's not scoring than Besser does when he's not scoring, because Besser does have a very, very, very marginal slight edge in points per game over his career than Ehlers. So if we're talking point production consistency, they're relatively equal. But I take that as in you think he does enough without the puck or without outside of his production than Besser does. He impacts the game in other ways more.
Yeah, I think he plays an all-around game. I think he can lead your transition game. You know, it piqued my interest when Marco Sturm talked so much about zone entries during his introductory press conference and really highlighted that as an area they want to improve. I, years ago on this podcast, used the term automatic zone entry to describe Taylor Hall. Nick Ehlers is pretty damn close to that. Like, he is one of the best in the league at successfully gaining the offensive blue line with the puck under his control. So if that is important to Sturm and the Bruins and it's something they want to address, well, Nick Ehlers would do a damn good job addressing that. You know, Besser is not as dynamic with the puck on his stick. He's more reliant on getting set up by a line mate. And again, we've talked about it. Like, maybe that is Casey Mittelstadt. Maybe that connection works. They're friends. Like, in theory, those two games should work. Or maybe you get really inconsistent play from two inconsistent players and it's a disaster and they're minus 30. Because that would also be in play.
So I'm going to ask you guys a question here. Between Besser and Ehlers at, let's just call them both 6-year deals at like $8.5 million versus Patrick Kane, let's call it 2 years, $3 million, whatever.
It's probably going to go up from there now at this point, but
sure. But
I would have to assume the Red Wings have already offered that. So if he hasn't taken it, it's
well, so
because he's going to get more.
So AFP analytics was projected, projection was 1 year, $3.5 million. I just did 2 times 3 because maybe the extra year would take down the cap, but fine. Let's just do what AFP said, which was 1.5 years. But which of those would you prefer? Because if you take a look, because the argument here for Patrick Kane isn't just maybe you get – well, you want to get the speed of Ehlers, but Patrick Kane does – he is cerebral in transition. He's done it for a long time, and from a point production standpoint, he would help your power play. But you can make the argument that Patrick Kane could give you similar – production, maybe even more, at a fraction of the cost and a fraction of the term. And then maybe you take a run at some certain players in the 2026 UFA class, because that free agency class is pretty strong. I'm not saying like McDavid or Eichel. I'm like even the winger class. I mean, you have Kaprizov, you have Panarin, you have Kyle Connors is on that list somewhere. So would you rather just kind of punt until that free agency and just stopgap with Patrick Kane this year?
No, because we think that now, but like, look what has just happened over the last couple of days. Like, this is what free agency is going to look like in an environment where the cap is going up, what, $9.5 million every year for the next 3 years. Teams have more cap space. Fewer guys are going to get to free agency. So we can look at the list now and be like, hey, looks like there's going to be some pretty good guys available next year. We could get here June 30th next year and be like, there's 3 good players available again. Like, it, so much can change because all these teams now have more money to work with. So I am not a fan of like waiting things out till next year. So that would not really factor into it for me. So Kane, short-term, cheaper versus – let's say Ehlers, because I like him more long-term. Honestly, I would probably go Ehlers because I want to start finding like foundational pieces and pieces of my core moving forward. And yeah, Kane can help short-term, but it's just that. It's a short-term Band-Aid. And I need to start finding guys who can grow together and be something together moving forward for more than a year or two.
Do you think Kane could provide cap flexibility for like an in-season trade or something like that? Like, are there benefits to outside of next year's free agency class?
Yeah, I mean, there are, but again, like that doesn't do anything to help me start putting together a core to move forward with.
Yeah. I mean, I liked Kane when we had our mock off-season, our, you know, Brian and I both liked Kane as an option, but we also both had Sam Bennett as the signing. And, you know, and you could have even plugged in any of the other guys you're talking about. Like, he was a supplemental, not a main piece of an offseason for that. So that's where the difficulty is, because I think that he would help the power play. You know, there's certain things he could do, but the most important thing is to try to find what your top six is going to look like for longer than just next year. So that's where the question comes in, and we're going to have this answered within the next 24 hours, less than that. So, you know, just a conversation for now. We'll react once we actually know who they get, probably pretty soon. We'll put up another podcast pretty soon, but before we sign off on this one, I did want to, just because we've gotten requests, people had tweeted at me, and they wanted us to go through the day two of draft picks just a little bit more to fill in, you know, what all happened from the second round through the seventh round when the Bruins picked.
Yeah. I mean, look, right off the, we already, if people missed our James Hagen's reaction. They can go back, listen to that. We did about almost a half hour right after the pick. I really like William Moore, who, by the way, today said he prefers to go by Will. So I will just call him Will Moore. Really good pick at 51. Like, most rankings had him top 40, a couple, you know, as a first round guy potentially. Really creative offensive player, smart player, heading to BC this fall. Like, that's good value, and that's a dynamic, another dynamic prospect up front, which, like, all of a sudden the Bruins have a few. You know, now you have Hagans, you have Moore, you have Will Zellers from the Coil trade. Like, okay, like, all of a sudden you're starting to put together some forwards who might become something. Hagans should be something. Moore and Zellers have a shot. Like, there's talent there.
And don't forget adding Fraser Minton too when the Carlo trade. So
yeah,
he's like, someone who probably makes right. the roster. Like, he's probably on the roster this year.
Yeah, right. Like, the different kind of forward in terms of potential offensive upside, but yes, definitely an NHLer.
Yeah, I mean, Zellers in particular, and I know there's a narrative about the Bruins drafting a bunch of BC guys, but. Moore is yet to play for BC. He's been at the U.S. National Development Program, so he's going to BC. But yes, obviously, there's been a lot of BC Bruins guys. But Will Zellers, he will not be on ComAv. He'll be in North Dakota next season playing for the Fighting. Actually, not the Fighting Sioux anymore. Aren't they like the Eagles or something?
Fighting Hawks.
Oh, this world we live in.
But they still call them, by the way, their fans still call them the Fighting Sioux.
They do call them the Fighting Sioux.
Yeah.
Some of the best uniforms in college hockey for a long time now. But that logo was a big part of it. Anyway, Zellers going to North Dakota. I'm watching him live today, obviously, and just hands of gold, great shot, great release, which we knew that. USHL Player of the Year, leading scorer. I really want to see how his game translates at the college level, playing against bigger, stronger, older opponents. He has all the skill in the world. I want to see if he can make plays when the speed and the physicality makes it harder to do so. I feel like we'll have a better gauge on what could his ceiling potentially be in the NHL. It's tough to comment after USHL season, despite how good it was. I really want to see him next year at North Dakota. Is he going to put up 30 points, 35 points, 40 points? Is he going to put up, you know, 15? Or and even if he does put up 15, like, okay, then there's like a following season. But I'm curious to see how he does. So there's going to be a lot of attention for us on the NCAA level in New England, especially in Boston with BC. But Zellers is somebody to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah, and Scott, just because we don't have a lot of time, thoughts on, you know, day one of development camp with the draft picks that the Bruins brought in?
Well, we touched on the story of Hagans and Moore getting in late and going on the ice anyways. You love seeing that. Like, yes, it's kind of easy points to score, right? Like, don't sit out day one with your new team. But they had the option. And, like, I don't think anyone would have blamed them if they were like, yeah, they didn't get in until 4 a.m., and so they stayed off the ice. But that was good to see. Like I said, like, I know there's people out there who will tell you so-and-so looked great and whatever. Like, I honestly can't really overreact to one day of development camp. I think towards the end of the week, maybe I'll have some more complete thoughts. But I thought, like, Hagans obviously looked good out there. Moore looked good. Let's see. We mentioned Liam Pettersson, defenseman they drafted out there. Vasek Blanar, the Czech mystery man. They both look good. We got to talk to Blanar after. He's a pretty funny kid. He enjoyed that people couldn't find him on Elite Prospects. I will say, some of these picks that seemed like reaches in real time, and maybe were, because if you're just going by consensus rankings, but like Liam Pettersson, was not ranked in the top 100 in most places. SportLogic did have him 68th, but it seems like NHL teams had him higher than maybe the public rankings, because I heard from a couple people in other organizations, no ties to the Bruins, who said they liked that pick. Seemed like other teams had him on their board. And then with Blanar, I asked him today, he said he knew he was going to get drafted because he had talked to enough teams who clearly had interest. He actually didn't think it was going to be the Bruins. He said he talked to them twice. But yeah, like that's another guy who's like, wasn't even ranked most places, was playing in a lower junior league in Sweden, but clearly has some talent. You know, I think you could see that Monday. You'd see it if you watched some video of him. And he's going to be moving up to the highest level of juniors in Sweden next year. So that'll be a good step up for him. I mentioned I like the Bruins strategy, so I'll just quickly touch on that. They took offensive guys. They took guys with upside. And Don Sweeney even said it on Saturday at the end of the draft. You know, we think we can teach them defense. Like, some of these guys are not complete players. This Cooper Simpson out of the Minnesota High School is also heading to North Dakota. Pure goal scorer, great shot, speed, raw rest of his game. But I like that the Bruins are taking those chances. Like, I like that they're, for so many years, we hear about like these safe players and they like that they're two-way players and high hockey IQ and all that. I like that they're actually taking some chances on offensive upside, and they're not all going to hit. Like, some of these kids are never going to have a good enough all-around game to make it. But I like that they're saying, you know what, we're going to go for the offensive ceiling, and then we're going to try to teach the rest of them and see if they pick up enough of it.
Yeah, and at least for some of the guys we've talked about, they're going to good colleges that are going to be able to work that into their game, right? Like, I don't question BC's ability to work on different aspects of guys' games that they know. Like, a program like BC, the coaching staff knows what they need to get ready. North Dakota, that coaching staff knows how to make guys NHL ready. There's certain coaches that's what they preach. There's plenty of them in Hockey East, but they're all over the country, where it's, I know exactly how to get you, even if it's not what you want to work on. I know how to get you to be appealing to a team that's going to say, yeah, we want to bring you on, you know, we'll start you in our AHL team next year, whatever. That's what these college, at the end of the day, as much as I love college hockey, that is what these coaches' jobs are. And some of them throttle guys' offense a little bit in terms of what they want them to work on, because they know they need to polish the defensive side, the 200-foot game. I've seen it happen. I've seen coaches even knock guys down a peg to make sure they get it through their head. They need to get these things that he's telling them done in order to be successful at the next level. So they're going to be in good places. At least the guys that are going to North Dakota and BC, like those are good places to work on those things.
So we've spent a lot of time talking about players that are drafted. Somebody asked me last week about if there was any undrafted camp invitees that were going to be at development camp this week. One that popped up to me was defenseman CJ Foley. Now, Foley is a right shot defenseman. We've talked about how the Bruins' right side of their blue line is thin. Now, is a development camp invitation the solve at Boston's second pair right shot defenseman this year? No, that's not what I'm saying. But my point is, they invite this player to development camp for the potential of seeing what he can be. Is he somebody that can go to Providence at some point down the line and turn into something? I want to quickly talk about him because he is a more polished player. Okay, he's playing in the NCAA. He spent his last couple of years playing for Dartmouth College, and he's been a decorated player there. He's 21 years old, so he's still young, but he had 16 goals, 34 assists, 50 points in 65 games played over his first two seasons at Dartmouth. And when I watch him, to me, he kind of reminds me of a taller right shot version of Matt Grizzlick. Not a perfect comparison, but just, you know, skates well, creative offensively for a defenseman, but just could be like, he's somebody that I found interest in. If we're talking about undrafted camp invitations, I'm sure he'll go back for his junior year at Dartmouth, and then maybe the Bruins sign him to go to Providence. But, you know, nobody thought Matt Grzyk was going to be much of anything necessarily when he was in college. I mean, nobody thought he would be a top four fixture in Boston for 3-4 years necessarily. So sometimes these players come out of nowhere. Grzyk was drafted by the Bruins.
Yeah, but Grzyk had a little more. He was a third round pick. He'd gone to the development program, like World Juniors. That I stylistically like that comparison, but background wise, I would just say very different.
Yeah. But again, like still third round pick, you don't necessarily project him to be a top four defenseman on a, you know, really good NHL roster. I'm just saying sometimes these players surprise you. But anyway, is he somebody that you watch and you say he could have an NHL future, or is he somebody that you watch and say, could be a good AHLer, and maybe that's about it?
Yeah, we'll see. I know people like him. Like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I watched a ton of Dartmouth last year. They're not one of the bigger New England programs. They're not on TV a lot.
I'll say they had a sneaky good season. Their first half was better than expected. They were ranked in the top 20 in the first half by right around December. All of a sudden, they had been consistent enough where people were like, oh, wow, they're actually a legitimate ranked team this year. And Dartmouth, that doesn't happen a lot at Dartmouth. Ivy Leagues in general, I know people, Cornell and Harvard, yes, but like Dartmouth, Brown, those are teams that, you know, you never know what you're going to get necessarily year to year. And they had a good year last year, at least to start.
I also, Scott, I forgot to read off some of his accolades at Dartmouth before you go, but he was a 24-25 Ivy League Player of the Year, all Ivy first team, unanimous all ECAC first team, ECAC Player of the Year finalist, and Hobie Baker nominee. Now, I don't know if that's because many teams submit their personal nominees.
That works. There's like 100 Hobie Baker.
I figured that.
The Hobies are, there's so I many guys. That.
But still, like a lot of Ivy recognition.
Yeah, what I was going to get at is, like, I'm not going to pretend I watched a ton of them last year, but I talked to people who liked him and who, like, kind of threw his name out there. And then when he got invited to Bruins camp, we're like, good, like, it, you know, he'll turn some heads. So, yeah, I imagine he goes back and has another strong season. There will definitely be pro-interest teams who want to sign him. Now, whether that's with the NHL in mind or they think he's a good AHL player, some of that's going to be decided this season. But, like, obviously he's on people's radar and, you know, seems like a good player with some skill, who can move, who can defend, listed at 5'11". So yeah, certainly a player worth monitoring. And right, like we talk about the Bruins not having many right shot defensemen in their pipeline. By the way, all 7 players they drafted left shots. Just random, but
they did trade for Soderstrom too as a right shot.
Deep. Yeah. Yep. But yeah, but you know, Foley definitely a player to keep an eye on. We know the Bruins, when they bring these guys into development camp, it's because they have some level of interest. Doesn't mean they're going to sign all of them or maybe even try to sign all of them, but it's a clear sign there's interest there.
Yeah, the one last name I want to bring up, just because I know some people had been asking me, are they going to draft another goalie? They did not. I said the person you need to look at development camp, besides the guys that maybe people already knew about, is Alvin Boya, who is a non-drafted player who the Bruins invited to their development camp, goalie out of Maine. If that sounds familiar, Jeremy Swayman had the same path. He went to Maine, and then though he was drafted by the Bruins previously, before he ever ended up in college. But Alvin Boya, good goalie. He's at development camp. Probably, if you're thinking, oh, what can the Bruins do next at goalie, and they need to maybe start developing someone else if you don't think that they have the answer, because I talked to people who asked me about this. I do like Alvin Boya, but once again, he's not drafted by you. So if you like him, he's a free agent. You have to then be the team to bring him in, offer him what he wants. You know, you have to win him over, just as much as he has to win you over. So that's another guy to look at this week.
Yeah, a little on the smaller side for goalies at 6 foot one, but clearly very good.
Like had a great season. Like his personality. Every single person I've talked to, including his coach Ben Barr, has nothing but nice things to say about the guy. Really hard worker, good, just sound goaltending from him whenever I've watched him. So if the Bruins end up wanting to go that way, I definitely would say that was a smart thing to do in terms of goalie depth.
Yeah, and just on goaltending, I know Brian listed it off the top, but worth very quickly touching on, the Bruins re-signed Michael DiPietro, who could have become an unrestricted free agent. There had been reports that he would have interest from other teams, but he's back now. So interested to see if maybe that opens up, you know, does that open up the possibility of a Corpusalo trade, or do they try to keep them all? DiPietro would have to clear waivers to get sent to Providence, but, you know, at least a mild surprise that that he's back.
Yeah, good news for that's good news for the goalie depth too. Brian,
you're in mute.
Oh, sorry, guys. Sorry about that. Honestly, so much happened over the last 24 hours. Development camp signings.
We didn't even get to talk about how amped you are about Cousy. I mean, we didn't even get to it.
Well, honestly, like Scott just touched on like the Corpusalo element of it.
I was going to say, we got a long summer. Obviously, there's going to be a special Cousy episode at some point.
Well, I'm going to be mass producing the Cousy Cousies if anyone wants them. So until they send me a cease and desist.
Shout out Bricktop 06 for giving me the idea. But we didn't even talk about like Lauko. And then we talked about how we'd be okay if they let Johnny Beecher go. So they obviously signed him. They chose him over over Lauko. So there's stuff we didn't get to today, unfortunately. There's a lot to get to, and but we'll break it all down again later in the week. And free agency starts again tomorrow, Tuesday, or today if you're listening, on Tuesday at noon. So we'll be right back here to break it all down. So thank you all very much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Hey guys, thanks for watching the Skate Podcast. If you want to see more of our videos, visit our playlist.
Not in front of a screen? You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't forget to follow us on social media. And if you enjoyed this video, please don't forget to give us a thumbs up, subscribe to our channel, and leave a comment.